This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The Harlem Renaissance produced a bounty of art and literature from African American communities who had moved north during the Great Migration. But during those early decades of the 20th century, poet Ann Spencer's house was a sanctuary in the South. She hosted important thinkers like W.E.B. Du Bois, Langston Hughes, and Thurgood Marshall at her home in Lynchburg, Virginia. All the while, she wrote revolutionary poetry, sometimes up and down the walls of her Queen Anne-style home. It came to be known as a sacred space to her friends and family. That house is now a museum and the subject of a new photography exhibit at UNC Chapel Hill. The Sacred Spaces Art Exhibit opens tonight at the Center for the Study of the American South. With me to talk about the exhibit and Ann Spencer's place in American history is her granddaughter, Shawn Spencer Hester. She is also the steward of Ann Spencer House. Shawn, welcome to the program. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Also with us is J. Lee Green. He is a professor emeritus of English and comparative literature at UNC Chapel Hill, and he wrote Ann Spencer's biography. Welcome, Lee. Good to have you.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And John Hall is the photographer who created the Sacred Spaces exhibit. Hello, John.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Lee, tell us about Ann Spencer. Who is she? Who was she?
Ann Spencer is probably the most complex and fascinating person I ever met. Historically, she was a poet in Lynchburg, Virginia, who was, she and her house became a nucleus for a lot of prominent people during the 1920s especially, but even before the 1920s and after the 1920s. And it was around her that a lot of things galvanized, literary, social, and political.
When we think about her, name is often associated with the Harlem Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Harlem. I don't think of Lynchburg, Virginia. How common was it for places in the South to be these kinds of salons where that movement had expanded and found a home?
Very common. You had what I would think of as satellites of the Harlem Renaissance in Washington, D.C., Richmond, Virginia, Durham, Raleigh, Nashville, Tennessee, on, and all the way down to Birmingham, Alabama. But Lynchburg was unique among those, I think.
How so?
A lot of creative collaboration went on in Lynchburg that did not go on elsewhere. Small groups of artists and intellectuals and social activists met in Lynchburg in a way that they did not meet in the other satellites. And the interaction among, say, these three different groups who themselves were interconnected, that is, the social activists were also writers. A lot of that happened in Lynchburg that did not happen in some of the other smaller places, the little hubs.
How much of that was because of Ann Spencer and her house?
All of it was because of Ann Spencer and her house. That's what makes it unique.
Well, Shawn, you visited that house, the house of your grandmother. Tell us about the house and your visits when you were a girl.
It's a special place. It has all these great places to play and hide. In the house and outside of the house, but inside it has this wonderful back stairway, which is not a really wide stairway. And I say that because on part of that stairway was her filing cabinet from the bottom to the top. And so you had this little space to run up and down. But it was we used it because we could slip in and out without being asked to run and do something for an adult. And then you had the telephone booth, which was always fun to hide in. And I still like to go in there and close the door and hide in. And not many people had a telephone booth in their house. So that was fun. And then we had the attic, which was our indoor playroom that we would, we were from a time where we had to be inside when the streetlights came on. And so I'm from a family of eight children, and there were probably seven of us that were traveling to Lynchburg to visit my grandmother. And so we would use that as our indoor playroom. And still today it has a train set and things like that upstairs.
Well, you heard Lee Green describe the importance of that place and your grandmother in the history of literature. And I say the history of literature, Ann Spencer is the first Virginian and the first African American to be whose poetry was included in the Norton Anthology of Poetry. Mm-hmm. Am I right about that?
Yes.
So she is an important literary figure. How much of that
of
did
American
you,
poetry?
American poetry.
It's
how much of that did you know while you were hiding out from your parents in that house?
I didn't know. I share the story often that when I really kind of figured it out, and still may not have really resonated to me of really the meaning, but I was around whatever age you are in the eighth grade. My eighth grade teacher found out.
I was 16, but that's a whole other story.
I don't think I was 16. 12 or 13 or so, yeah. And so some of my brothers and sisters were boasted about who their grandmother was, and even my father is very well known in aviation. But I was one that did not boast because I didn't want to be called out. And so this teacher found out that I was Ann Spencer's granddaughter, and she asked me to read a poem at my eighth grade graduation. And so I had to go home and inquire with my father and ask him, is Dranny a poet? You know, is she right? And so then he pulls out all these great books, and which didn't mean anything to me, probably Langston Hughes and James Weldon Johnson and all these wonderful books that had her poetry in it, County Collins. But I was only interested in the smallest, the shortest poem to read. And so I selected Dunbar, and that was the poem that I read.
Will you read it for us now?
Oh, sure.
There we go. This is your grandmother's poem, of course, about Dunbar.
This is my grandmother's poem, Dunbar. Ah, how poets sing and die. Make one song and heaven takes it. Have one heart and beauty breaks it. Chatterton, Shelley, Keats, and I. All how poets sing and die.
That is Ann Spencer's poem, Dunbar, read by her granddaughter, Shawn Spencer Hester, who is the who takes care of the house now in Lynchburg, Virginia, the subject of a photography exhibit at UNC. Lee Green, talk about her writing style and her work as a poet. Where does it fit in American poetry?
She was a lyric poet. You might think of her as a nature poet because nature is infused into everything that she writes. Her style is more modeled on British writers than American writers. And among American writers, she is probably in style closest linked to what we think of as the American Renaissance, the writers of the 1850s. She's very cryptic in a lot of what she writes, much like Emily Dickinson was in the kinds of things that she wrote. She is very different from many of the poets of the Harlem Renaissance in style, but more important, in content, in that she rarely wrote about race or social issues. Her general topics are about love, life, family, and nature.
And yet she thought about those issues and spoke about
them. Oh, very much so. Ann Spencer was a radical, and that even got her ostracized for a long period of time in Lynchburg.
So how do we know about that if it's not in her work?
I know about it by talking to people who knew her. When I first started investigating Ann Spencer, I went through town to talk to people I knew, and they were very reticent to talk about her. But finally, the editor of the newspaper began to explain why people were so reticent to talk about Ann Spencer. One example, let's say, long before Rosa Parks, Ann Spencer was on the trolleys in Lynchburg. She sat where she wanted to sit. And that created a lot of confusion among people in town, both blacks and whites. The blacks who thought this is too radical a move, whites thought it was too radical a move, but Ann Spencer didn't care. And she wrote letters to the editor of the paper and other people too, very vociferous letters, challenging Jim Crow. And as I say, that alienated both sides of the community in Lynchburg because she stood alone in many cases in how she defied social issues, particularly Jim Crow issues. She had partners, Vernon Johns for one, but she was sort of a fireball in Lynchburg.
Well, there's there are some audio included in this, not of Ann Spencer, but of others and contemporaries and others who mm-hmm. would have been living roughly in the same period, among them Pauli Murray, an activist, mm-hmm. Anglican saint now, a poet herself, mm-hmm. who was 30 years younger. But there's a clip of tape of her talking about her activism and her Pauli Murray as a writer and how it worked in her life. Let's hear that and then come back and talk about it.
I'm inclined to think that when I could effectively act, I did not write. When I could not act, when I was blocked from acting, it came out in words. It had to come out in some way. And being both a person who is moved to express in words as well as in the body, that very often it took both forms. But that in each case, I was striving for the highest form of action.
All right, so that's civil rights activist and poet Pauli Murray in an interview in 1976, recorded by the Southern Oral History Program at UNC Chapel Hill. Lee Green, did Ann Spencer reflect or in any way express the same ideas about writing, a way of expressing herself when she couldn't be an activist?
Not in the same way, I think, that Pauli Murray does. Ann Spencer did not express her social activism in her poetry, but she did in prose. Interestingly enough, it wasn't difficult for her to get her poetry published, though she didn't try to get it published, but she submitted some essays about social issues that the same journals and magazines would not publish. I haven't seen them. I've seen comments about them, and I suspect they were far too radical, even for the NAACP's organ, The Crisis, to publish.
Wow. Well, some of it did get, as you say, the essays not so much. The poetry did get published, mm-hmm. and to great critical acclaim and popular mm-hmm. acclaim. Mm-hmm. Some of it's on the walls of the house, Sean. Tell us about that, about some of the ideas and the ways she would simply scrawl her thoughts on the walls.
Well, there's one that remains that you can see to this day, and that's in the kitchen and the cabinet. And that one is, it's on the cabinet, the title is A Lover Muses, but later on she changed the title to Lines to a Nasturtium and gave the subtitle A Lover Muses, and that's a wonderful poem. And she and her friend, Maisley Meredith, who was an artist, so it was Anne's poem, Maisley Meredith's hand, that painted this on the cabinet wall. But in her bedroom, she wrote on the wall, which is now covered up by this wonderful oil on canvas titled The Cocktail Party. But she talked to J. Lee Green about some of those things that were written on the wall, things that she would buy from the grocery store, things she went to plant in her garden, order plants and flowers, or just thoughts. There's a letter to Langston Hughes that mm-hmm. was written on the wall. And she would get up in the middle of the night like most people. But for most people, they would write on a journal or something by their bedside. But she used this number 2 pencil, and she just wrote it on the wall. And how it became covered up, so I'm told, is that it was through my grandfather, who we referred to him as Pop, convincing her to maybe redecorate the bedroom. And that was to cover up this, you know. And also, he didn't want people to think that she was losing her mind, you know, writing on the wall either. So very often my grandmother would sometimes, if she wanted to get away from people, I learned all this from J. Lee Green's book, that she would play sick. And so then they would have to come up to the bedroom. But she would do that because she wanted to get away from people. But then, people care so much about her. They were coming to visit her anyway.
Well, John Hall, talk about photographing this, because the space itself seems to have played an important part. Ann Spencer's a place as a poet, obviously. But what about the space and photographing this as a photographer? What do you see when you walk into that space?
When I discovered the house through the encouragement of a friend of mine up in UVA, I was just bowled over. I had never I am an architectural interior photographer, but I had never or rarely came across something with so much personality, so much style, so much life. And it was a darkish kind of house, and I just was concerned about my technical ability to get what I was feeling into these photographs, and it's an ongoing thing. I'm hoping to be able to do more and more, but it was just an epiphany.
Well, I wonder what, you know, when Sean mentioned the telephone booth, which is very cool, and this is, I think, where writers and others who, her guests, kind of the guest room and the guest part of the house, would stay. And this phone booth, which you might think for a photographer would be a problem. I mean, it's a dark space within a dark space. It's illuminated. I don't know if that was just a technical thing, or there are times when space speaks to you in a way that surprises even the technician, the photographer.
Yeah, absolutely. I just went for it. I just went for what I felt, and I figured if I could get it on the digitally to look okay, that I could do a little bit of work back and on the computer, and it worked. I was just thrilled.
Sean, you are taking care of this place now. It's now a museum. Tell us about sort of turning it from the place where you used to run away to get, you know, run up and down the steps to a museum.
Well, I didn't turn it into a museum. It was turned into a museum long before I came back to Lynchburg. It was made a museum in 1977, and Lee was part of that. And that was just from a group of people, business people and individuals that lived in Lynchburg who approached my father and mother, who had relocated to Lynchburg after my grandmother passed in 75. And the reason was that, the reason they relocated to Lynchburg was because now they have this house that they, the home house that they have to care for. And so they, what was your question? I've kind of gone.
Oh, I'm talking
sorry.
About curating.
Okay,
it. When
curating
all of a sudden
so
you've
anyway,
got a museum and a grandmother and
yeah,
but my
role in it now is just a caretaker for this decade. There's been other caretakers before me, and so I'm just gonna do my part, and I apply my profession to what I do there as an interior designer, and I've talked to several professionals about how to curate and how to care for the interior of the museum. And one person, I think, gave me some great advice, and that was to do what you think your grandparents would do. Treat it as if it's still their home. And so that's what I do. And so some of the things that John shows in his photographs, these wonderful pink walls, and that is faux painting of wallpaper that she had applied to the walls there at one time. So I hired a faux painter, Janet Weimer, and it took her a month just to do that foyer of hand painting, all those beautiful pink stripes. So that's kind of my approach.
Can I get you to read another poem for us?
You want me to read Limestone Nasturtium?
Will you?
I will.
That'd
this is
great.
The one that's on the cabinet wall. This is one of my favorite poems. I don't know. I just love it. Lines to a nasturtium, a lover muses. Flame flower, day torch, Mona Loa. I saw a daring bee today, pause and soar into your flaming heart. Then did I hear crisp, crinkled laughter as the furies after tore him apart. A bird next, small and humming, looked into your startled depths and fled. Surely some dread sight and dafter than human eyes as mine can see, set the stricken airwaves drumming in his flight. Day torch, flame flower, cool hot beauty, I cannot see, I cannot hear your fluttery voice, lure your loving swain, but I know one other to whom you are in beauty, born in vain. Hair like the setting sun, her eyes a rising star, motions gracious as reeds by Babylon bar all your competing. Hands like, how like, brown lilies sweet, cloth of gold were fair enough to touch her feet. Ah, how the sense reels at my repeating, as once in her firelit heart I felt the furies beating.
Sean Spencer Hester reading from the poetry of Anne Spencer. Shawn is Ann Spencer's granddaughter and steward of the Ann Spencer House in Lynchburg, Virginia. Lee Green, a professor emeritus of English and comparative literature at UNC Chapel Hill, and also wrote a biography of Ann Spencer. John Hall, a photographer who created the Sacred Spaces art exhibit, opens tonight at the Center for the Study of the American South at UNC Chapel Hill. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, author Nick Brown talks about his latest book, In Every Way. Stay with us.